Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the interim dean of the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work my colleagues and this season our alumni in the fields of policy, planning, and health are doing. This 30th anniversary year for Blaustein, we are focusing on our alums and the contributions they are making around the world. Today, we welcome Stefania Davia from the World Health Organization to the podcast. Stefania got her bachelor's degree in public health here at Blaustein. Welcome, Stefania.
Thank you so much. I'm a big podcast listener, but I've never been on a podcast before, so this is very exciting for me.
I think eventually everyone will be on a podcast, so here's your chance. So I think you are probably the guest that is coming to us from the greatest distance that we have had. So tell us a little bit about your journey from Rutgers and New Brunswick to Copenhagen, I think it is, and the World Health Organization.
Yeah, sure. So I finished Rutgers in 2011, which is crazy to me that that's actually already more than 11 years ago. After graduation, I spent that summer doing some volunteer work in Nicaragua for a nonprofit. And then I moved down to Washington, D.C. to start my MPH at George Washington University. And during my master's, I had a lot of really random jobs, everything from a tech on an oncology floor at a hospital. I was a research associate on an HIV clinical trial, and I was also doing mobile HIV testing out of a van at one point. It's probably also why it took me 3 years to finish my master's, but part of my master's involved a practicum. And so at the time, GW had a scholarship program to send students abroad for this kind of work. And I was placed with the World Food Program's HIV and Nutrition Unit in Rome, Italy. So after the practicum was done, I went back to DC and back to my job on the clinical trial, but was sort of plotting my eventual escape from DC. I wanted to try something new. And in autumn of 2014, I applied for what is now the Public Health Institute CDC Global Health Fellowship. And I ended up in Lesotho, which is a small country inside of South Africa. Most people can't even find it on a map. But I lived there for 3 years. It was a really, really interesting job I was doing. I was working on a population-based HIV impact assessment. And I was doing everything from protocol questionnaire development, training data collectors, conducting field visits, data analysis, a little bit of everything. After that, I spent so many years in research, so I thought doing a PhD would be a great idea. And I ended up in Gothenburg, Sweden, doing a PhD. But I sort of quickly figured out independent research wasn't really for me. So after a few months, I started applying to new jobs. One of those jobs was with WHO's Regional Office for Europe in Copenhagen, and that was February 2019, and here we are ever since.
That's that's like, fantastic, and it's a great...
Spark Notes version, but...
And it's a great illustration of sort of the variety of things someone can do after they get a public health bachelor's degree and then an MPH. And so
a lot of
different opportunities that you've explored. So let's talk about what you're doing right now. Tell us about the kind of work you do for
WHO. Yeah, sure. So my exact title is just Technical Officer for Data Monitoring, Analysis, and Forecasting, which is a really broad title, which is great because I actually do a little bit of everything in the data science analytics field. I do kind of everything from data collection and data validation. And this is from, there's actually 53 countries in the WHO European region. It's not just the EU. It's everywhere from Iceland to Kazakhstan, from Norway to Malta. So it covers a really big geographic area, which makes the work really interesting. So I do a lot of mortality and demography statistics, data analysis, and this is for everything from putting together country profiles and doing stock takes, which are kind of like a snapshot of a health situation and trends in countries that our regional director and the WHO country directors use to sort of make plans for what WHO will do in the future. I also do a little bit of health information systems assessments, which is when we go actually into a country, we have meetings with different stakeholders in the health information system, and we sort of look at some of the strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats that exist, and sort of make some recommendations on how to improve the situation by having partnerships with WHO and other international organizations. And I also just work with a lot of different country governments and data quality and reporting, and it's a really nice mix of like technical and diplomacy. And so that's been a really nice experience for me to have both.
That's great. That's a lot of exciting work. So I was reading the Times a couple weeks ago that one of the failures with COVID-19 in this country, in the United States, was a data failure. The fact that, we didn't know who had what when, what commonalities there were between people, and just that our data systems failed. It wasn't obviously the only problem. There were a lot of other problems as well. And I'm wondering how your experience, whether Europe has had similar problems or, whether there's an effort right now to sort of move beyond and make sure, heaven forbid, the next time something like this happens, we have data systems ready to move here to help us.
Yeah, so actually, after almost 2.5 years with in the COVID pandemic, my job has only just started to return to what it was before 2020, this summer, actually. In terms of like Europe, we've had a lot of the same challenges. And of course, like working across different countries, the health systems are so different. The way they classify diseases is so different. The way they sort of treat pandemics are completely different. The way they respond to international agreements is completely different. So it makes working in an emergency situation really, really challenging. Now, WHO Europe is moving towards what they call a dual track method of like delivery now, which means that on one hand, they're like ensuring that countries are prepared and that they're ready to detect and respond to emergencies, but also at the same time, ensuring that routine disease prevention and control programs are also still in place because a lot of those were actually not really done and neglected even a little bit over the last few years. And we're already starting to see some of those diseases and conditions that were doing really well and not an issue before COVID start to resurge now. Yeah, so during the first year of COVID, everything sort of all of our normal things stopped and all the effort was on COVID. And now at least now that we're not in like a crisis mode anymore, we have time to ensure that the rest of the health system is sort of operating at an optimal level as well.
Great. So from a data perspective, what should we be doing that we're not doing? What needs to get better?
I think the things that need to get better is that there needs to be common agreement on the way certain terms and certain things are defined. And I think people need to be willing to share data a lot more freely than they are. One thing we've seen a lot during these health information systems assessments, is that in a country, for example, maybe the Ministry of Health or the Department of Health and Human Services in the US, maybe they will have some information and they will want to share it. But for example, the Public Health Institute or CDC won't want to share the information they have back. And that's been a big problem in Europe to get a lot of the different countries own organizations within the countries to sort of share and cooperate together. And if countries within themselves can't cooperate, how on earth can they cooperate at an international level to bring data and good information together to build like evidence-informed policies? It's impossible if own countries can't first come to a consensus themselves. So I think that consensus and cooperation is really key, and you really can't accomplish anything in any field until you have that. And I think it's also very overlooked. I think with data, people tend to think like you need to start with having everything electronic and everything works really well. But no, it's actually like people come first always, and communication and cooperation is key.
Yeah, you can have the best data in the world, and if you don't use it the right way,
exactly,
or people don't talk to each other,
exactly,
then it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So would you put that as sort of the big lesson of the past couple of years, or what other lessons do you think we've learned and WHO has learned?
Exactly that. And I think along with that, I think that even if countries have different health systems and different levels of development, a lot of times the struggles when it comes to data are really quite the same. There's not enough people to do the work, and that a lot of times, even if data are collected, they're not used in a right way at the right time, in a way that positively impacts the policies that are being made. And I think there's a lot of disconnect between the data that's generated and the policies that are created. And I think one thing that WHO and other bilateral and multilateral organizations do well, is that they provide a forum for countries to come together and discuss these kinds of things. And they really provide a platform to address issues in like a nonpartisan way that I think can be really, really a challenging thing to do.
Great. So let's look back a little bit on your Rutgers education, because we have to do a little bit of promotion here.
Of course.
What are you still drawing from your bachelor's degree studies? What lessons do you remember that still resonate today?
A lot of things. I think probably the two biggest things Rutgers has taught me, among a lot of things, was one, how to work collaboratively with people from different backgrounds and sort of how to use that to your advantage. And the second thing is really how the importance of being involved in activities sort of outside the classroom. I grew up in a kind of relatively homogeneous community in central New Jersey. And my public health classes at Blaustein were really some of the first times that I was exposed to like people from all different backgrounds. Of course, I'd experienced diversity before, but not in the quantity that I feel like I got at Rutgers. And I feel when you're working in a field like public health or public policy or urban planning, you really are exposed to everything. And so having that in your undergraduate education is just like, it's invaluable. And I have been at a lot of other universities, and there's really no place like Rutgers for that, I think. There's also so many ways to get involved, like in the community through Rutgers, doing, you know, internships, or at Blaustein when I was there, we had to do a practicum in the fourth year of public health school. And I just had some really great experience that I feel set me up really well for real life.
Great. Yeah, no, it is amazing when one stands on the podium at graduation and looks out at the graduating students, the amazing diversity and racial diversity, background diversity, the number of first generation students that we have here. And that's true, not just of us, but really throughout Rutgers. And so it's really good to hear you say how valuable that was. Let's conclude by asking you, what would you say to students thinking about majoring in public health, getting an MPH, or considering careers in the field? What advice would you give? What encouragement would you give?
I would definitely say, and I hope it's okay to say this, that obviously what you do in the classroom and your studies and your grades, of course, they matter. But personally, I think what really served me the best is also getting involved outside the classroom and getting some other experiences, sort of practical experiences that really got my feet wet a bit and gave me a taste for like what was to come in a professional setting. You know, I got involved with the health outreach promotion and education group at Rutgers, and I did a lot of really cool stuff through them. And I feel like the real kind of magic happens when you can take what you learn in the classroom and when you utilize it in a real world setting. And I just don't think it's ever too early to start looking for those experiences. And it doesn't have to be anything outrageous. There's ways to get involved in your local community that can provide this. And I think Rutgers, being in New Jersey and being close proximity to so many big cities and big industries and big research centers, it's just the perfect environment to sort of cultivate a good mix of like professional development with what you're learning in the classroom. And so I would definitely say just get involved in as many exciting and cool things, and nothing is ever too small to sort of put your attention towards.
That's great advice. And of course, it is okay to say that. We definitely want our, we want our students to concentrate on their classes and all the wisdom our wonderful professors have to offer. But we also want them to get the most out of their 4 years as an undergraduate. It's true in the graduate programs as well. And you do that by having a much broader scope than just in the classroom. And we certainly recognize that. Well, thank you. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming to us from across the ocean.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so nice.
Excellent. Also, a big thank you to our production team, Amy Cobb and Karen Olson. And we will see you next week with another talk from another alumni from the Blaustein School. Until then, stay safe.